Thank you for joining Paul Bartlett for Rethink It, the podcast that pushes the boundaries of thinking about leadership and life in a world that is thinking less about church.
Well, I have a very special guest today. This is a man with many titles. He's the senior pastor of the Hope Centre churches right throughout Queensland, and he is the national president of Australian Christian Churches, which in fact makes him my boss. So I have to be careful today. It's great to have, all the way from Queensland, speaking to us today, Pastor Wayne Alcorn. Pastor Wayne, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Paul, it's a pleasure to be with you, mate.
Now, I know we share a love of fishing, so I want to start right here. How often do you get out to fish? You're a very busy man. Do you do it regularly?
I do it regularly. I think my love of fishing is even trumped by my love of the water. I actually started as a water skier.
Somebody
introduced me to V8 ski boats when I was 17. Up until then, I had a love for land sports, and then all of a sudden, somebody introduced me to speed on the water, and I was hooked. And I have owned boats of some shape or form for the last 43 years.
And so you're a late starter when it comes to fishing, then?
I'm a late starter. I'm actually even a poor performer. Anything you see on social media is that rare, amazing catch. There are a lot of somewhat futile days. But, you know, it's interesting, Paul. Probably the best known part of the Bible is Psalm 23. And David said of his God, he said, he restores my soul. And it's interesting. Here's a guy that says he takes me by green pastures and waters, still waters. For me, I used to love still waters when I'm water skiing. I love salty water now. And there is something about being in spaces like that for me that I fully come alive, either in the water, near the water, on the water. And then, you know, if I can wet a line and pull something in that's sizable and tasty, then it's a big bonus for me.
So then what's your proudest catch? This is your moment to brag about the best fish you've ever caught.
Best fish I've ever caught was in the USA. I was at Virginia Beach speaking at a conference for my mate Steve Kelly, and we went out and I hooked a marlin.
Wow.
I hooked a marlin. I actually have a citation from the governor of Virginia that says I've caught a marlin.
Wow.
And it was incredible. Lynn actually doesn't believe it. You know, I've got a government certificate that says I got it. There was a certifier on the boat. Guess what? I didn't get a photo. She goes, why didn't you get a photo? I said, have you ever hooked one of those monsters? It's a frenzy. You don't go like, hang on, I'm just going to hold it and smile. And it's kind of one of those tag and release things. And after it swam away, I went, we have no photographic record. So people like you would probably remain cynical.
Yeah, look, I'm going to sort of say I believe you, but I really think I need the photo, not the certificate. But anyway,
I've got lots of great photos from when I'm up in the Torres Strait with some of our wonderful Indigenous friends, and then, of course, over in New Zealand. It's just crazy fishing over there. Those guys, I don't even think they're good fishermen. They don't even have to try and fish jumping.
No, I know. See, I've been fishing up north as well. Now, of course, you're married to Lynn. You have two sons, four grandchildren. Have I got that right?
Oh, we've got five now. Added first time in 60 years into the Alcorn line, a woman has arrived.
Oh, fantastic.
60 years. And sadly, our borders are being closed. Your state and mine are separated by the Great Wall of China. And this beautiful little lady is 6 months old. She's got teeth, and I still have never held her. So we're looking forward to this happening pretty soon. But we got five grandkids. Up until that, we had all boys, sons and grandsons. So it's been a fun family to grow up in.
That's amazing. So over the years, Wayne, I know you've got many things. You've been involved in ministry. But, of course, you've raised – I wanted to talk about this because you've raised, you know, some great kids and grandkids. And how have you found over the years that you've been able to maintain a balance between your leadership life and your family life? Would you say you've done that well? It's been a struggle for you?
I don't think anybody would say they've done it perfect, Paul. But if your work on my team – and an issue comes up and you say, I need to get to such and such with my son or my wife, they go, is that okay? And without even thinking, my default response is family comes first.
Yeah.
And you know, we've got boys that played at a fairly high level in sport. I didn't miss any important games, even though, you know, back in the day, I was leading a ministry called Youth Alive, which had me all over the country. Yeah. And, you know, it's never easy. But I think the important thing is that, you know, we use our diary. We don't just write things in, we keep to it. And, yeah, you know, what I do, we would know a lot of things that were important in family at the start of the year. And on my summer break, early January, I would get our diary back. Remember when we used to have paper diaries, Paul?
Yeah.
And you'd write in them? I would black out days, things like wedding anniversaries, birthdays, school speech nights.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just a fun gig, aren't they? You know,
yeah.
Spending an entire night to watch a kid walk across the stage for 10 seconds. But, you know, I don't think in our entire time, the boys growing up, I never missed any of those. You know, if they made a rep team, I'd change, I'd alternate things so that I could be in the grandstand. But yeah, funny thing, you know, Paul, I was sitting with a friend of mine. My boy, oldest boy, was a spin bowler, and he made the, you know, state team for about 4 years. And his best mate in that team, he grew up with and played cricket with him from when he was 8 and went right through until he's into his mid-20s. And his best mate was a wicketkeeper. And that's a special relationship between a bowler and a keeper. And his dad was a copper. And every time I'd go to a game, his dad was in the crowd. And I remember going, there was a, you know, there's a famous stadium here in Queensland where the boys were playing one rep game. And there were very, very few people in the grandstand. It was a midweek day. Fortunately, the oval was only like a 5-minute walk from my office, and I was able to get down there. And I walked up there, and there was the dad. And I walked beside him, and I said, "Yeah, I just don't think I've ever seen a game that you've not been here supporting your son." And here's a policeman who's obviously worked with a lot of kids and walked through a lot of pain with people. You know what he said? "When my son's my age, I wanted to look back on his life, and every key moment, there's an image of me in that moment."
Right, that's fantastic.
I thought, wow. And I think, you know, you've got a big life. I've got lots of responsibilities. But, you know, when I get to the end of my life, I don't want to look back and just see my life's been filled with stuff and meetings.
No.
I want to make sure that I've invested in things that matter, things that live longer than me, and that's family.
Yeah, it's a great thought. Actually, one of my little rules over the years too with my friend was that I feel like sometimes the church, it almost wants me to sacrifice everything for it. So I flip it over, and my attitude as my kids were growing was, you know what, sometimes I'm going to sacrifice the church for my kids, and I'm going to try and, you know, almost have that balance in terms of, you know what, sometimes I might have something booked for the church, but something comes up from a child. Instead of telling my child I can't do it, I'm going to say to the church I can't do it. And just make sure my kids hear that and see that they saw that I gave up something that was considered important by everybody else for them, I think was something we're able to do. And I love the way you describe that, Wayne. I think it's fantastic. So I know Hope Center's slogan is about because people matter. And I love that. I think the Prime Minister stole that off you too, didn't he, or something? I think the Liberal Party used that.
He was actually in one of our church services just before the previous federal election, and he's looking at that sign on our big LED screen. He turns to me and says, "Where'd you get that?" I said, "It's mine." And I like that. He actually launched his campaign that day, and I heard him use it. I thought, okay.
Yeah, good.
I think that's a feather in our cap.
We're here to help, though. Can you talk about that slogan? Because it's simple but powerful. How have you and your church lived out that, I guess, that because people matter thought?
Yeah, I remember a number of people over the years have said, like, where does that come from? I said, it's not a motto, it's not a slogan, it's an answer to the reason why we do everything. We do everything because people matter. They matter to us, but more importantly, they matter to God. And, you know, it's really easy in the modern church to get caught up in programs and buildings and events. But at the end of the day, you know, God loved the world so much he gave his son. I mean, if people matter to God and we're his ambassadors in the earth, they have to matter to us. Mm. And over the years, there's been lots of things from the youngest children right through to seniors that we've done. And, you know, I know your heart for community, Paul, and our church has a great sense of affinity and connection with you when you come, and you know, you've watched what we do in the community, but even in the life of the church. You know, I think giving people dignity, you know, from the simple thing to helping them find a decent car park and a seat, through to, you know, basic hospitality and caring for them, through to shut-ins. You know, there's a lot of people in church life. They, you know, they serve and they give their best for decades, and then they get old and they're shut in and they're forgotten. We're really stirred that the Bible, as he says in Matthew 25, there's going to come a day when the Lord himself will separate sheep from goats. And and some of those things is not, you know, how good was your production? It was, did you visit those that were isolated? Did you care for them? And I'm actually really motivated and really stirred by that. And I don't think we, you know, always get it right, and we miss moments and we miss those times when we could do better. But I've been in a number of significant events just in the last few days, community lunches at the end of the year when, you know, I think I was in one of our campuses, just the people in and around one of the poorer areas in Southeast Queensland. We had 145 people that are living in their cars or live in rough or you know, have been for a long time on social welfare. Most of them don't come to church, so the church goes to them.
That's right.
You know, and
it's one of the things I've noticed, Wayne, actually, when I was up there preaching for you a couple of years ago. I mean, I've often actually reiterated this to other pastors that I love the way, even though there are obviously similarities, of course, in all of your locations as a church, but actually there was also a sense that it was reflecting the community that it found itself in. And so I think one of the campuses I went to, was, because it was so multicultural, I mean, I walked in and there, everybody's, you know, for that day, I think it must have been a multicultural day or something. Everyone's dressed in their native clothes, they're doing food from different countries. And I mean, I just love that. That said to me that we're not going to cookie cutter. We're going to not make you fit into something we like. We're going to listen to you. We're hearing your passions, your diversity, and you built that around that. So it was, it's pretty important. Speaking of people, pastors are people, believe it or not, apparently. Yes, and one of the things we've changed over the last few years, and I know you've been a passionate advocate for it, is this mental health for pastors. And I know you've had your own journey there, and it was probably a bit of a catalyst. Talk to me today about, we're talking about rethinking. What have you rethought around mental health and pastoring that you probably weren't thinking 5 years ago?
I have discovered that I am human and hence not bulletproof.
Mm.
And you know, when you're, you know, a younger guy, you just keep plowing on, taking on more and more and more. And, you know, as leadership responsibilities are added to everything else we're doing in life, you don't realize that the scales are tipping, 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 tipping the whole time. And at the start of 2018, I actually got to a point where I was really not in a good place. Didn't crash, didn't burn out, but, you know, I was at a point where I didn't like being me anymore. And I reached out to some really good friends who connected me with somebody that I could talk to that was safe. And I learned that we have to find people that we trust that are able to walk with us. I'd said it over the years, but I learned it in by experience and in reality that a problem shared is a problem halved. And, you know, remember when we used to fly? Remember those times, things in the plane, in the aircraft?
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. Yeah,
vaguely remember them. I discovered that when you're up in the air, things seem much smaller than when you're in amongst them. And I find that having somebody that's a somewhat removed from the intensity of what I'm going through can sit back and give objectivity and counsel and support. And, you know, the big thing is encouragement.
Yeah.
I learned something from my English teacher. I didn't learn a lot. But I had to learn later, sadly. But Mrs. Sharp, my year 9 English teacher, taught me a lot about suffixes and prefixes. And the prefix EN means into. And when people encourage, they put courage, they put strength for the fight into you. And I thank God that when I was at a point where I was, I think, just overwhelmed, I had a mother that was like a force of nature, like Margaret Thatcher, that had a stroke and declined and lingered for 3 years. And watching that was hard. And watching my dad, who, you know, a man of faith, you know, would pray every day for God to heal her, and that not happen, along with just, you know, movement responsibilities, family challenges, church life stuff. It just literally became too much. There was no one big thing.
No one big thing, just a progression.
There's never one big thing. It's, you know, we talked about your love and my love for being out of the water. Rivers block up, not because logs form. It's like silt, just little thing up, little thing up, and it builds up and builds up and builds up. And I think mentors helped me find the way to clear the
Tree. It's a good point. And, you know, we both, I think we share the same mentor. And so he often, I never forget, he often says this to me, reminds me, and it's kind of a bit of a challenge. He says, Paul, I love the ACC pastors. He said, they're some of the best leaders in the world, but they scare the living daylights out of me. He says, and I think what he's trying to say is, he says, look, we probably put our foot to the floor and go flat out all the time. And the last people we often look after is ourselves. And I think, you know, we know he's done well to help us recognize that actually you can do both. You can lead well, efficiently, strong, but you can also look after yourself as well. Wayne, as we finish today, I want to ask you just one more question. When you look back on your life so far, what has been your proudest personal and or professional achievement in your life that you'd say, I'm just so glad I was able to be involved in that?
Wow, that's a really big question, Paul. I don't know if there's anything that makes me feel proud, but there's lots of things that give me a lot of joy. And for me, the greatest joy is not one single thing. It's one generation that you know you've sown into, and they're stepping up, and you know there's going to come a day that they're going to do greater things than you've ever done, and that you've played a part in that, whether it's your own sons, whether it's your own daughters, or whether it's people that you know that you've influenced. Perhaps they've come to faith in your ministry and now they're doing incredible things. For me, I was at our Bible college graduation last night, and watching some of these people, you know, cross the floor and receive their certificates, and you remember that day they made decisions that have changed their life, and you look at them and go, I know your story, and I played a small part in that, you know, through to people that are leading great things that you've had a part to play. For me, the significance of life is doing things that you know will affect others and live longer than yourself. And for me, it's that whole space for me that brings great joy.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we appreciate today. You've brought not only some ideas for us to rethink, but also some great wisdom there on life in general, particularly in and around, I think, this idea of being able to lead our families and our church at the same time. So, Wayne Alcorn, thank you today for joining the Rethink It podcast.
Absolute pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Rethink It. For more, visit rethinkit.com.au. That's re-thinkit.com.au. Or follow Paul on Instagram at Paul E. Bartlett.